held my heart completely captive. He spoke, and I believed his words. I'm ashamed of my actions, Winter. We are in a situation I have no idea how to contend with. You make it seem so effortless. Please, I scoffed. You do, he entreated. I'm doing all I can just to wrap my mind around what is going on. You, on the other hand, are saving our people, making alliances that the world has never seen before, and today you sit on the precipice of the largest victory our people have ever known, not to mention you've found a way to free us. How does a mere mortal compete with that? Compete? I mean, for your heart. But I know now what I must do. And what is that? Protect me? I'm sick of people saying they need to protect me. Not protect, not shield, not hinder. I need to fight by your side, Winter. By your side, where I have always lived. We've been through so much together. I know no other way. Let me pay for my transgressions. Tallow, your life is too steep a price. I forgive you. Now, please, go with Cedar. There's a real chance there. I will go when you do. I nodded and silently thanked him, even if he was a fool. It felt like something that had been torn from my soul had been returned and stitched back into place. Perhaps the scar was still visible, but the mending would hold. That I knew. Winter, Hendrick nodded. He was one of Tallow's close friends, and one of the boys that had been there when they were jeering my every move. He was followed by Uriah, Jacob, Wembley, and Lunnell, each nodding respectfully to me as they passed. They're staying, too, Tallow told me. Seven strong. I pulled out my sword, as did the others. We laid the points of our blades together. Hayden was running around trying to set everything up as we had planned. I got an uneasy feeling as I watched a large number of Comanchekes lie down in mock demise. It did not seem wise to play with death, as ultimately he was unfailingly the victor. Those men out on the periphery were given arrows with broken-off tips to place them somewhere on their body to make it look as if this was the reason for their fall. Three pigs had been slaughtered and the blood used to make the wounds look more realistic. It must have tormented Kindred to place his warriors in this position. What are they doing? Tallow asked, as we watched the Comanchekes adhering arrows to themselves and having blood poured over them. It was Hayden's idea that we have Kindred's people look like they had suffered grievous losses on the outskirts of the battle. Menot's men should pass them by, and then we will have them surrounded. That's kind of impressive, Tallow nodded. Would so many have died by arrows? I don't think so, but the plan will fail unless we have enough warriors to prevent Menot from simply retreating. The Comanchekes are not happy with this plan. Why? If it works, it almost assuredly guarantees us a victory. It's not honorable to deceive the enemy. Don't look at me that way. I didn't say it. That's just how they feel. So where are we supposed to be? Somewhere in the middle. We are to look as if we are in hand-to-hand combat with the ones that got through. And Hayden's men? In the middle, and also out to the far side of Menot's approach. He really thought this out, didn't he? He did. What? Again with the funny looks. This is what they do. While we are trying to find enough food to survive, they're learning battle tactics. While we are trying just to make it through a few battles, they're figuring out how to win. You envy him. No. I wouldn't wish to spend my entire life planning for war. I do wish that our people had been given the same opportunity to prepare, though, rather than living as so much wheat waiting to be harvested. I don't want to be the rabbit hiding from the fox. I want to be the grizzly bear that everyone runs from. Winter, he said, shaking his head. Our people may be the rabbits, but the grizzly would be wise to steer clear of you. If not envy, then what? That next question caught me off guard. I didn't have an answer for myself, so how could I give one to Tallow? What do you want me to say, Tallow? Yes, I like him. I'm grateful that he saved our people, that he allowed us into their stronghold. I like that he has fed us. I like that he desires or seems to wish to protect us. And he didn't abandon me when I needed someone the most. I knew that last would cut him, but I couldn't just forget how much he had hurt me. I'm sorry, Winter. I'm here now. Can you forgive me? You make it through the day, Tallow, and I will do my best. He smiled that same lopsided smile from so many years ago. I'd known then that we were going to be together forever. Why had I ever doubted it? Or more importantly, him? The smile quickly left him as Hayden walked back. I thought you said the Distantians were staying out of the fight. It looked like disdain on his face. For the ones fighting or the ones staying behind, I could not tell. Tallow had never hidden his feelings in regards to Hayden. It would have been impossible for him not to pick up on that dislike. We decided to stay, Tallow told him. Try to stay out of the way. We have proved ourselves in battle, Tallow shot back. Have you? For all your talking, I've yet to see you do anything with that shiny blade of yours but polish it. Well, I could change that right now, Hayden said, pulling his blade free. Tallow matched him. The entire compound stopped to look. Even the so-called fallen Comanche Keys sat up to watch. Stop! Stop right there, both of you, I said with as much authority as I could muster. That's right. Keep your little Distancian boy in control, Hayden hissed. Hayden, Tallow, I think we have more to worry about right now than whatever this is. I had stepped in between them, both looking past me at each other. Get out of the way, Winter. I would hate for someone as inexperienced as Tallow to mistakenly hit you. That's enough, Hayden. Provided there is a tomorrow, you two can settle this then. Oh, there will be a tomorrow. For me, at least. That's why I would rather resolve this now. This one won't be around to watch me revel in my victory, Hayden declared. The confidence with which he said those words created a pit in the middle of my stomach. I knew some were blessed with the gift of second sight. In that moment, I prayed he wasn't one of them. A runner spared us any further posturing. Menot! He was breathing heavily. He must have been running as fast as he could to deliver the news. Just over the hill! He hunched over, hands on knees. Well done, Jalal! Hayden clapped him on the back. Everyone into their arranged locations. Menot will be upon us soon. Winter, will you please take your group to the center? I nodded. Tallow glared at him. I knew it wasn't over between them. He would have ignored the command entirely had it been directed to him instead of me. Once we were in place, a group of Comanche Keys surrounded us. Hayden's plan was in motion. The first deception was the Comanche Keys on the fringes, lying dead by Klondike arrows. Past their bodies was a wide berth where presumably Menot's warriors would muster, as Klondikes, Distancians, and Comanche Keys locked before them in a pretense of mortal combat. The goal was to entice the Hylians into the open area between the dead and the mock battles. When they were in the designated killing zone, we were to break contact with each other and put the Hylians between a hammer and a vice. With our superior numbers and the element of surprise, it was believed that this fight would be over before it started. The clang was deafening as multiple swords clashed across the fields. Of course, the object was to make the fighting look convincing without actually injuring anyone. This was the only part I hadn't felt comfortable with. In an effort to make it look genuine, the warriors would have to fight hard. There were bound to be a lot of wounds created accidentally before the Hylians ever got in range. "It is an honor to fight you, Ghost," Kinder said, as he stood face to face with me. His face was lined with savage streaks of red clay. "To a victorious day. May our adversaries die well. That would be helpful. Ready?" I brought my sword up. The echoes of vibrations from our collision had just tapered off when Menot's men crested the hill before us. The fighting intensified as we obtained an audience. I heard more than one curse above the din when someone received a slice or had some body part struck. On a cue from the person we were fighting, one or the other was at some point supposed to fall over so that we could move to the next opponent. That way the battle would not appear stagnant. The Distancians and the Comanchekes, locked in swordplay, were told not to move their positions in order for the real trap to form. I was strategically placed as bait to draw Menod in. I thought Hayden was being overly optimistic. The chance that Menod, as large as he was, would join the fray was negligible. He looked to be more of a leader by delegation than an actual leader of men. Warriors were swirling about, sweat pouring from them. The battle might be fake, but that didn't make it much easier. "How?" I said, rubbing my arm where Kinder smacked it. "The ghost should not allow herself to be hit in any manner," Kinder chided. He was right. I was just having a hard time trying to understand what my eyes were seeing. It was Menot's army, but there was something in front of them that defied explanation. The sun blazed off of whatever it was so intensely I had to squint just to be able to see in its direction. The closer the object got, the more men stopped to stare, shielding their eyes and lowering their weapons. Hayden more than once had to tell them to keep fighting. I thought at first that perhaps it was some gigantic burning torch to lead the army. When it finally crossed into a patch of shade, I realized my mistake. I lowered my own weapon, as did Kinder. The fiery red was caused by the reflection of the sun off of a metal man, or rather a man encased in an armament of metal. By the size of the device, I knew who that man must be. "It would appear that the Fat One has graced us with his presence," Hayden smiled as he swept nearby. Kinder had resumed, and kept smacking me in various places, trying to re-engage my sword, but I just could not peel my eyes from Menot as I tried to reconcile what I was seeing with what I knew previously of war machinery. As he got closer, I could see long, thick poles attached to each of his legs and arms. There were two men assigned to each pole. Their sole job seemed to be Menot's locomotion. He looked like the world's largest puppet. A marionette with eight controllers. Nope, make that nine. There was one at his back that had the unenviable task of making sure Menot didn't topple over. He would have fried like a turtle if that happened. A sword, easily as large as me, was in his right hand, and the men on that arm came forward swinging it viciously from side to side, demonstrating it was not merely for show. It was ludicrous, yet absolutely terrifying. "He cannot be killed," I said in disbelief. "Ow, Kinder, stop hitting me!" "Perhaps he cannot, but the men around him are as vulnerable as you." He once again smacked my arm. The armored Menot and his men lumbered toward us. They were obviously in no rush to join in. Why would they be? In fact, why show themselves at all? His scouts could just watch from a safe distance and see who emerged the victor. Wouldn't that be the wiser thing to do? Swoop in after and finish the job? The longer Kinder and I sparred, the more I began to doubt our present predicament. Could Menot have such disregard for his men that he would needlessly enter them in a battle they didn't need to be in? Or was his ego as large as that shiny metal suit? It just didn't add up. "Something's wrong, Kinder." "Yes, it is that Menot is taking so long to get here. My arms will have lost all their strength if he does not move his immeasurable bulk just a little bit faster. It's more than that." "Damn it, Kinder, that hurts!" Every time I tried to think, Kinder would send a jolt of pain to some random part of my body. If I survived the day, it would be weeks before all the marks and bruises had healed. I began to parry with him, praying that it would all work out like Hayden had planned. My arms were beginning to burn from exertion. At this rate, I would be too tired to kill Menon. "I am going to fall," Kinder told me. "I'd rather it was me," he smiled. "That will not do. I think that Menon has made his journey for your sake." He gave me no chance to argue as he collapsed to the ground. Oh, this is much better. Dead men don't talk kinder. I smacked him hard on the thigh with my sword for good measure. That's payback. He flinched, but was still smiling. And stop smiling, I added. Before another opponent appeared in front of me, I had a moment to watch Manot's ungainly advance. He has to have a weak spot somewhere. Maybe I'll drive my sword through his viewing port. The Hylians had reached the outermost Comanche Keys. I had already killed 6 men. They weren't supposed to keep falling. If one more did so, I would be tempted to join him. My arms were soaked in sweat. I had to constantly wipe my eyes to keep the stinging salt from them. Menot stood as a silent sentinel on the edge as his men moved forward. I wanted to kill him just for making me work so hard for it. My heartbeat suddenly bolted. It wasn't fear, not of the enemy anyway. This was acute anxiety. Something struck my conscience, was trying to warn me all was not right. "It'll be okay," Tallow said reassuringly by my side. He must have noticed something in my stance. "They're not advancing right, Tallow. They're taking too long." "That's normal. It's a battle. They're being careful." "I'm not sure that's part of their doctrine." All of the Hylians, save Menot and his personal mobility team, were now crossing through the downed Comanche Keys. All they needed to do was advance another 20 or 30 feet, and Hayden would give the signal for them to rise and for us to disengage. "Come on, come on," I whispered, keeping one eye on my fight and one eye on the Hylians. Then they just stopped. In one horrifying moment, I finally figured out what was really going on, what had been edging through my conscience for days. Now I was powerless to stop it. The Hylians had maneuvered themselves that for every one of their swords there was a prone, defenseless Comanche Key. I turned and ran toward them, screaming, as Menot raised his sword hand and then brought it down. That was their signal. With swift and deadly precision, his men stabbed, hacked, and sliced at the Comanche Keys on the ground. "Oh, God, no!" My lips were pulled back in terror and anger. Screams of hundreds of bleeding men collided with and swept past me. He'd known. Menot had known. Tallow and his men were racing to keep up. I could hear him behind me entreating me to stop. Menot was laughing, the sound echoing throughout his armor and exiting across the field, mocking me even as I cut into the first of the Hylians I encountered. My strike had been so savage he'd nearly been cut in two. The screams in front had barely quieted before a second crescendo came from behind. The Comanche Keys that were coming too late to the aid of their fallen were being hacked apart by the Klondikes to the rear. "Hayden!" I screamed. He'd done this. He'd set all of us up, and the Comanche Keys were going to pay the ultimate price for his treachery. 2 men were advancing on me. I swung wildly at them as they leered. I knew I had to remove myself from the rage I was feeling. Brody had taught me that my anger would be my undoing. I needed to detach and become one with my sword, to allow the world to slow down. Tallow and his 5 slammed into the 2 that were coming my way. Part of me, the part I needed to repress right then, wept as one of Tallow's men died. A sword stroke to the neck had sent him to the dirt with a spray of blood his hands were powerless to stop. The Comanche Keys had rallied, but now they found themselves outnumbered and surrounded as Menot and Hayden closed the trap. "We need to get out of here!" Tallow had one hand behind him, reaching out, making sure I was within arm's distance. "We cannot leave them! They're dead, Winter, and we will be soon." He was right, and I knew it. The problem now was we, too, were completely encircled by both forces. Whether he'd kept us backed into the cave or out here in the center, this had been Hayden's master plan. All was lost. I could only hope that Cedar had done her part and got the rest of the Distancians out to safety. It was possible at some point Hayden would figure out how they had escaped. I just had to pray they'd had the sense to move as far away from this desecrated ground as possible. Chapter 20. Cedar's Story. "Catching fireflies is easier than this," Cedar said as she tracked down another of her clan. "Any of you move from this spot and I will knock you out and drag you back by your hair," she growled at them. She had collected half of the Distancians in the tiny sleeping chambers, and would have had them all if some hadn't wandered back out. Many of them claimed to have forgotten something or left to go and look for their friends.
"What about our swords, Cedar?"
"I forgot mine," John asked. He'd known Cedar nearly his entire life, but the crippling shyness he suffered from made it impossible for him to look her in the eye. "We're in the middle of a war, John, and you didn't think to grab your sword? Lucky for you, I should be able to replace it with something better." He smiled wanly. Cedar headed back out. Next, she found Tallow. "Winter and I found a way out. You need to come with me."
"What about Winter? I just saw her heading the other way."
Cedar didn't say anything. "So let me get this straight. The two of you found a way out. Now you're rounding everybody up to get them out of here while she goes to battle?"
"Joe said you were a little thick. Apparently she was wrong, and you're a lot thick. Come on and help me. For every two I grab, one wanders off like a sick puppy."
"I'm not going."
"Tallow, this is what she wants."
"It's not all about what Winter wants, Cedar. I will not leave her here to sacrifice herself."
"That's sort of noble. When did you get all nice again?"
Tallow sighed.
"You know, maybe if you just told her that, we'd all be going. Now I have to leave my best friend behind while I take everyone else out of here."
"She's not staying because of anything I have or haven't said.
Why doesn't she just come with us?"
"Hayden has her followed night and day. If she leaves, we'll all be discovered."
"Damn it!" Tallow dashed off.
"I take it you're not coming?" Cedar shouted to his back. "Get out of the way," a Klondike said as he pushed past her. "Worthless Distancian."
"I'll show you worthless."
She pulled her sword free. He snarled at her before leaving. Cedar did not like the animosity he displayed toward her. Technically, they were fighting on the same side. At least for now. It was her first inkling that all might not be right, but she did not have time to dwell on it.
John, get your butt back there," she pointed her sword at him, and he scurried back whence he had come. "You have got to be kidding me."
She spent nearly an hour grabbing all the Distancians she could find. Besides Winter and Tallow and his five friends, she came up too short. She went to the mouth of the cave. The Klondikes and the Comanchekes were in the throes of their fake dance with death. Winter, Tallow, and his men were smack dab in the middle. Scanning the entire scene before her, she hoped to see the two she couldn't find. When she caught sight of Menot and his armor, her blood ran cold. Time was running out, as was her window of escape.
"I'm sorry,"
were her words for those she could not find.
"Be safe, Winter."
Tears blurred her vision as she raced back to her quarters.
"Look at her running from the battle," a Klondike laughed as he and his partner were hauling more weaponry outside. "What does it matter? They'll all be slaves or worse by the end of the day. Knowing Menot, he'll probably just eat that one."
They laughed and moved on. Cedar could barely fit back in a room, it was so crowded.
"Who's afraid of tight spaces?"
There were more than a few responses.
"Raise your hand. I can't tell who you are," she counted.
10?
Really?
Wonderful.
"Who can swim?"
Again, with the murmuring, "People, we've been through this. I cannot see you." This time 5 raised their hands.
"Okay, this is what is going to happen. I will lead my swimmers and a couple extra through that crevice, which leads to a small bathing area."
She was immediately peppered with questions.
"How will we fit? Where are we going?
Is it safe?"
"Shut up," she yelled. "A war is raging right outside this cave. People are going to die. Then they will come for you.
Winter and I have found a way to get us out of here, so you are going to do exactly as I say, without question and without protest. Everybody got it?
Who made you leader? Someone in the middle asked.
Leave, Cedar told him. I don't have time for this. Grab your sword and get yourself killed. You'll make my job that much easier.
I was just asking.
Through the crevice, you say?
Cedar smacked her palm on her forehead. Let me through, she said as she shoved to the far side.
Okay, those that can swim, grab the 10 that are afraid of tight spaces and follow me. Is that clear enough?
Cedar didn't bother to watch the nodding heads. She watched as the first 6 squeezed along the passage. Then she entered herself. The rest of the initial group began filing through behind her.
There is a hole inside this pool, just here, she pointed, and about 3 feet under. This hole is plenty big enough for any one of you. Both Winter and I have been in it. Just relax as much as you can and pull yourself through. Remember, if you don't keep swimming, I'm going to pull you through by your hair or whatever else I can grab onto. So if you want to avoid a fair measure of pain, I suggest you move along.
She stepped up to the lip of the rock.
John, go back through and watch the hallway that leads to the resting chamber. If you see anyone approaching, start coughing uncontrollably.
Me?
Do it.
Yep, he said, as he scurried back through the entryway.
Which one of you questioned my authority? She could now see, as 4 individuals pointed to the potential troublemaker. What's your name?
Vindo.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're one of Talo's friends. Why aren't you with him?
His head sagged down.
Don't go feeling all ashamed and sorry for yourself about not going out to battle. We're heading into the unknown, and I have no idea what's in store for us. Perhaps you will at some point wish you had died swiftly at the sharp blade of an enemy. But for now, you are going to get in the pool and help me stuff people through this hole and across. Got it?
Got it.
Cedar dropped into the water. One more distancian popped through the wall into the cistern.
Are you kidding me? She asked as she looked back. Should have brought a book. At this pace, I'd have plenty of time to read it.
She climbed back out and searched the faces. You, Blondie, she spoke to a kid who looked about 12 years old and was just trying to keep a low profile. Go back through that crack and keep them moving through.
Yes, ma'am,
he said obediently and wriggled back through. As the next one seemed stuck in the pass, Cedar reached in, found his head, stuck 2 of her fingers in his mouth, and grabbed a hank of hair.
Hey! Her victim yelled. That hurts!
He mumbled from between rock walls.
Don't I know it. You should hurry.
She leaned back with all her weight. When he popped free, she directed him where to stand. She poked her head in and addressed the next in line. You should hurry up, pretty boy, or I'm going to give you a bald spot. When the cistern could hold no more, she told her little crowd shepherd to hold. She grabbed Vindo, pulled him into the pool, and brought him down to show him the way through.
Whoa!
No time to be amazed. You and I will alternate until they're all through. Cedar pointed to her first swimmer, a boy named Delton.
I can't swim!
Another of the boys was crying.
Can you hold your breath?
Cedar asked. He nodded.
Great! You're first, she said.
Delton, wait here. No one, for any reason, goes back through that crack while I'm gone.
No, the boy muttered as Cedar pulled him into the pool.
She took his face with both hands. Hold your breath, or I'll drag your carcass to the other side. He took a big enough gulp of air that his cheeks puffed out. Cedar pulled him down. He began to resist until she punched him in the side of the head. When they popped up on the other side, he was so busy rubbing his head and protesting her abuse, he didn't realize he'd emerged unscathed, at least for the time being. She helped him out of the water and shook her hand from the pain in her knuckles. Vindo came up a few seconds later with his charge.
You good? She asked, before going back under.
Probably should have waited to see his response, she thought, smiling as she came back up through the pool.
Next!
Finally, Cedar and Vindo were escorting their final distancians through. Cedar estimated it had taken nearly 2 hours to get everyone across, but across they were. They'd only had one scare, about halfway through the process, when John had begun to cough. All eyes were on him. He turned beet red when he realized this.
Sorry. Swallowed a spider.
He was looking down. I think I'm going to beat that kid, Cedar said aloud, once her heart no longer threatened to emerge from her mouth. Most of the group had not traveled far from the lip of the pool once they'd emerged. Some had gone off to get out of their wet clothing and dry off. Others had tentatively started the exploration process. Cedar let them. Maybe they'd discover something she and Winter hadn't, something that could help them with whatever happened next. She warned them that if something looked dangerous, it probably was, and to not mess with it. She also told them to stay away from the food. That hadn't stopped one enterprising soul from giving it a go. He'd been in the throes of vomiting for nearly a half hour now. Idiot, Cedar said as she walked past. She grabbed five of the more trustworthy people she could find and showed them the basics of the M-16's operation, how to load it and how to shoot it. Then they waited. Please, Winter, Cedar hoped beyond hope that Winter and Tallow, too, would somehow have found a way to escape the battle. It's been hours, Cedar. How long should we wait? Delton was sitting down next to her. I know she's your friend, but she wanted you to get us out of here. The longer we wait, the more likely we are to be discovered. Cedar nearly spat out the acid that was on the tip of her tongue. She swallowed it bitterly. This wasn't supposed to be how it was. Winter was the natural leader, not herself. Cedar knew her role. She would support her leader in whatever endeavor they were placed in. But not this. She didn't want to have the remnants of her clan following her. She didn't know where to go or how to get there. Most of these people had no clue how to survive on their own. They'd been receiving handouts their entire lives. She briefly entertained the thought of just staying put. They had shelter, and she could assign guards around the clock to monitor the pool. She thought better of it, though. They weren't disciplined enough, for one thing. Odds were that the guards would wander off or fall asleep, and if Menot's or Hayden's men got the guns away from them, it would be a short conflict. She wondered why she had thought of Hayden as the enemy, but then quickly let it go. The other, more pressing problem was food. They had precious little of it, and there was none edible within the confines of these walls, as poor Fletcher's stomach casing was attesting to. One more hour, and then we'll go. She hung her head. She knew it was one more wasted hour, but she owed at least that much to her friend. Cedar turned back one last time before she lost sight of the pool. She'd left one rifle behind, and 100 rounds, just in case. The rest she had her clan bring with them. Her plan was to hide them once they were out of the cavern. If anyone pursued, she did not want them to have access to the powerful weapons. The one rifle was a calculable risk she thought worth taking. Damn it, Winter! She looked down the long corridor they had just emerged from. Are we truly past the pickets? Delton asked, looking around. He was having difficulty understanding that a border no longer bound him. We are. We're free, Cedar sighed. It should have been a momentously happy occasion, yet it wasn't. She had no idea how Winter and Tallow were doing, along with Sarah. She developed deep feelings for him the past few days. She didn't think she was in love, at least not like in the books. But she could have been, given enough time. That much she believed. Now she'd never know. In all honesty, she hadn't thought this was how it was going to work out. Her fantasy involved getting the people out, where the victorious Winter would join them, along with Tallow and Sarah. They would then walk freely, hand in hand, off on this new adventure. Everyone would live happily ever after. Right now she felt more like a babysitter. She was younger than everyone else here, so why was it her they turned to with every inane question, as if she had all the answers? Delton was about the only one she felt she could confide in and possibly share the burden with. "Any ideas about where you want to stop for the night?" he'd asked. The mountain they'd emerged from was now miles behind them. Many in the clan were grousing about being tired or hungry. Most were both. I guess this is as good a place as any. She'd been hoping that at some point they'd see a deer. With the rifles, they would have an extreme advantage in hunting it. But no matter how much she asked for quiet among the group, they'd sounded exactly like what they were. A bunch of inexperienced teenagers tramping through the woods. Anything within a square mile of their location had heard them coming. Within a few minutes, Delton had a fire going, and had sent four people out to hunt down enough firewood to keep the thing going for the night. After the disgusting judgment error with the meals ready to eat, Cedar only once had to tell people that the berries they'd collected were poisonous, and if they wanted to remain alive, they'd most likely not want them. There was a stream nearby where they filled up their water skins. Food was going to be a priority, but could wait until morning. Perhaps there were fish in the stream. It might be best if they stayed here a couple of days while they secured some protein. Plus, it allowed her to give Winter one more chance of somehow pulling off a miraculous appearance. One more day of walking, and they would be too far gone. And so would her hope of reunion. The majority of the group was sitting by the fire. It was the comfort of the warmth and company that it offered that kept them together. Cedar was not so inclined. She walked around the perimeter, ever vigilant for some sign of her friend or any hint of an enemy. "Fletcher isn't doing so good," Delton told her as she was about to pass by the tree he was leaning up against. "Has he had any water?" "He has, but he can't hold it down." Cedar and Delton went over to where Fletcher was. He was rolled up in the fetal position, alternating between groaning and moaning, if a distinction could actually be made. "We were just playing with him when we dared him to eat it," Jemmy, Fletcher's best friend, said. The two boys next to him nodded. "He's burning up with fever," Delton had placed his hand against Fletcher's sweat-soaked forehead. "Try and get him to drink more water. Maybe next time, think before you do something stupid. We're warriors, for God's sake, not children. And we're on our own now. We don't have any medis, so something as simple as a small cut could lead to infection and death." Cedar did not like the harshness which she delivered the words. But if not from her, then who else? The next morning had not started out with the promise Cedar had hoped for. In her dream, Winter was gently shaking her on the shoulder to wake up so they could go get some food together. When she opened her eyes, it was Delton's forlorn face she encountered. "Fletcher died." She'd thought about punching him until he said something she wanted to hear. "Do his friends know?" "I have them collecting rocks for a grave." Cedar sat up. "Come on, I'll show you where they want to cover him up." Jemmy and Clayton were placing heavy rocks over their friend. Tears were falling from Jemmy's face. Clearly he blamed himself. Clayton was pale, as if possibly in shock. He'd not yet assimilated what had happened to his friend. Jemmy turned when he heard Cedar and Delton approach. "It was just a joke," he sobbed. "A costly one." The words were out of Cedar's mouth before she could recall them. Neither Jemmy nor Clayton appeared to have noticed. Delton had stiffened. Cedar waited until the last stone was placed, and Fletcher was no longer visible. She threw a handful of dirt over the rocks, as was the custom she'd read about, and left Jemmy and Clayton to deal with their grief. "You could have perhaps shown a little more compassion," Delton assailed her when she came back to the remnants of the fire. It had been reduced to embers. "They caused it themselves with their stupidity." Delton bristled. "I don't have time for compassion. Those idiots just dared the life out of their friends after I warned them about those damned meals. Take a look around. We're all that's left. Too many more boneheaded things like that, and we won't survive the month." 3 rabbits had been caught that day, at the expense of over 100 bullets and 1 friendly fire flesh wound. Cedar skipped the meal as the meager portions were handed out. The meat was cut into sections no bigger than her knuckle in order to assure everyone got at least something. "I'm hungry. We were better off with the Klondikes." Cedar was catching snippets of conversations as she walked around. None of them were too particularly positive. "Listen up," she started. Delton ran over before she could begin speaking. Compassion, Cedar. Do you want me to find you a dress? You are acting like a girl. They've been through a lot, is all I'm saying. Maybe a nice bonnet and corset, she began, and then realized he wouldn't know what she meant. Forget it. Listen, I know you're hungry and maybe a little scared. So am I. But we're free. Free, someone scoffed. Free to starve. Cedar's blood was starting to simmer. Leave, then. I'm not holding you here. Where would we go? That's exactly my point. You are helpless. What do I care where you go? I'm not your mother. A large, dark-haired boy named Namble stepped out and faced the rest. We should have just stayed with the Klondikes, he shouted. Go, then. I just told you I wouldn't stop you. Maybe we will. Wait. Before you leave, I think you should know that whoever was victorious yesterday will almost certainly cut your throat upon your return. Make sure you don't give the rest of us up before you choke to death on your own blood. Namble and a few others gasped, some covering their exposed necks as if it could happen here. You lie, came from the crowd. The Klondikes were going to win, and we are, or at least were, allies. Oh, yeah? And how much did you personally contribute to that alliance? I mean, besides eating their food and taking up space. You can't hunt, she said, kicking at the small cooking fire. You can't fight. Most of you didn't even know where your weapons were. Maybe, just maybe, if you were women, they might keep you around for a while. There was silence as she continued. Now, with everyone's attention, her voice softened. The Klondikes don't care about any of you. We were all just a means to an end. Hayden only wanted to meet Winter and gain her trust. He knew she would never abandon her clan. The rest of us were part of a package deal. Don't see her here, Namble said, so I guess we know which side she chose. Cedar tossed her rifle to the ground. Immediately pulling her sword free, she strode past three men to get to the one who said those offending words. My best friend is probably dead, and she sacrificed herself for your pathetic life. The tip of her blade was firmly entrenched on the bottom of Namble's chin. She was pressing hard enough that his eyes were clenched shut in pain. I'd trade 20 of you to have her back. She didn't see it that way, though. She wanted you, all of you, to be safe, to have a chance to live a life she'll never be able to. You would already be dead if it weren't for Winter, and yet you want to go back because, gosh darn it, it's just too damn difficult to go forward. You'd rather have someone tell you what to do and when to do it as long as they'll give you a meal. I can't stand the sight of you. Just grab what you came with and get out of here. She pulled her sword from his chin, leaving a red line where she'd cut him. Oh, yeah, and if you tell Hayden or Menot where we are before he kills you, I will hunt down your worthless soul in the afterlife and finish what I should have done here. Cedar stormed off, Delton quickly in tow. Can she do that? Namble asked his friends as he ran his fingers cautiously across the wound Cedar had given him. That was sort of inspiring, Delton told Cedar when she finally stopped walking away. She was now pacing back and forth, stomping her feet hard enough to break anything that got in her way. How could these possibly be the people we ended up with? Cedar entreated to Delton. I'd take stubborn Tallow and his group over any of them. Delton ignored the slight. Cedar was their best chance at survival. She would just need some subtle guidance. You have to give them time, Cedar. Everyone knows that you, Winter, and Tallow stopped needing the broker's handouts by the time you got to 10 years. But most of them, including me, well, we never thought to do it any other way. It was easier. We accepted our fate and never had any desire or hope to change it like the three of you did. Now that it's here, we're not really quite sure what to do with it. It's not fair, Delton. It was Winter and Tallow that trained with me, that planned our freedom. We talked about this exact moment and what it might be like, and now I'm the only one here. I've got a secret for you. I'm hungry, and I'm scared, too. And the truth is, I have no idea what to do.
Dalton paused for a moment.
You know what makes a great leader?
Cedar said nothing. It's the ability to instill confidence in those around you, no matter what you're really feeling.
And you do that, Cedar. People are looking to you for the answers.
But I don't have any of the answers. Cedar turned away, as close to breaking down as she'd ever been.
Well, we're going to have to find some. Or you're right, none of us will survive the month.
Cedar's shoulders sagged for a moment, and she sniffed once. Dalton smiled when she wiped her sleeve against her nose and snorted.
Food.
She wiped her nose again as she turned. We need food. Find two people who can be quiet for more than the span of just holding their breaths, and can also maybe shoot somewhat straight, and I'll take them out hunting. That ought to shut up some of the crybabies.
Compassion, Cedar.
Yeah, compassion. You keep telling me that. Oh, yeah, and if any of the dolts try to leave, shoot them.
You said any of them could leave if they wanted to.
Yeah, I lied. How long do you think it would take before one of them cracks and gives up our location?
Good point.
It amazed Cedar what a full belly could do for morale. The once grousing citizens of Distance were now all laughing and telling stories around the fire as they ate roasted boar. Tomlin, one of the hunters Dalton chose, had saved Cedar's life. Her first bullet had scraped along the ridge of the boar's back, infuriating the beast. He'd charged a stunned Cedar, who began backpedaling. Tomlin had fired three shots into its side before it came to a skidding stop at her feet. He'd smiled at her as she thanked him.
This could work.
She was staring into the fire. Dalton nodded. He was busy licking grease from his fingers.
Chapter 21 Deceit and Conflict. It was a brief but intense fight. The Comanche Keys never stood a chance once Hayden's true plan had gone into effect. Most had died while pretending to be dead. I stood alongside Tallow, his friends, and kinder.
This is the price we have paid for our cowardly act.
Kinder was near to crying.
This has nothing to do with the plan, and all to do with the man that made the plan, I spat.
Hayden! I screamed. The fighting had stopped around us. We were completely encircled by Hylian troops, and in some places by as many as 15 soldiers deep. The screams had died down and were now replaced by the aftermath, as men had their wounds tended to. Those that had us trapped were holding steady.
"Yes, Winter. What can I help you with?" He was over to the left-hand side, out of the ring.
"Why? Why would you do this?
You mean, why did I have savage dogs put down? You might as well ask why I would crush a scorpion. Because I must, before it can bite me. Do not believe for a moment the meekness Kinder shows you. He is as close to a wild animal as can be on two legs. He'd pop your pretty little head in a stew bucket if he had half a chance."
"And what of me, then?"
"Well, I've got to admit, you are something special. And it is with great displeasure that I will not be able to fully discover just how special. Had I known how much Manet was going to desire you, I would have left you back in camp before that initial meeting and kept you for myself."
"You saved us. Why bother?"
"I saved you, Winter. I would have kept you alive, and Cedar, I suppose, for the sake of Serod. But that's it. The rest aren't worth their weight in salt. Distancians are fodder. We use them every cycle to cut the teeth of new recruits. Who do you think I had in that field with me that night I first came across you? Certainly not my seasoned men. I would not have wasted their time. The Ferals had surprisingly beaten us there. I was about to retreat when I saw you. It's unfortunate you were not born in a Klondike camp. You would have remained a renowned warrior instead of being traded as a slave."
"I am no one's slave," I roared.
Menot's cruel laugh could be heard over the ensuing silence.
"Oh, but you are, Winter. You're just too stupid to know it," Hayden said. "Menot offered up this truce. We would kill the Ferals together.
In exchange, I would give him you and whatever surviving members of your community to guarantee your compliance. I'll fight until I'm dead. And what of those with you? Will you sacrifice their lives as well? Tallow looked over at me. Until the end, Winter. I always told you I would stay with you until the end.
Oh, that's so sweet, Menot mocked as he was being helped out of his armor.
Could I make it to him? Before I could formulate a plan, Kinder was pierced with a spear through his stomach. He doubled over and fell to the ground when the spear was removed.
Stop! I cried. This isn't right!
I dropped down to the ground in a useless attempt to try and stem the red tide that flowed freely from him.
This is war, Winter. There is no right or wrong. Feral dogs must be put down. Your sacrifice is not for nothing, though. You have saved a lot of men from dying. Menot and I will not engage in battle for the remainder of this year. We will hunt down the Bruton death squads together while living in relative peace. Of course, when the new recruits come next year, we will repeat the cycle. But for now, I guess we'll be as close to friends as sworn enemies can be.
Hayden's features took a downturn as a messenger spoke rapidly and quietly in his ear.
Find them, Hayden cuffed the man on the ear. Problem, friend, Menot teased.
It seems that we are having a small problem locating the rest of Winter's clan.
I wish you would hurry. The sun is beginning to burn my delicate flesh. I'm growing bored and hungry.
You did it, Tallow mumbled. Cedar did, I replied just as quietly.
What? Hayden asked.
Come closer and I will tell you, I taunted him. Or are you afraid of a little girl? There were a few laughs amongst his men, until they saw the look of unadulterated rage upon his face. I thought I might have baited him well enough so that I could exact a small measure of revenge, until his messenger came running back.
Where are they, Winter?
Hayden was looking straight at me, even as the man was still talking in his ear. How should I know? I've been out here the entire time.
Where is Cedar? Sarah asked.
He seemed truly concerned, although I was having a difficult time being trusting of my own judgment.
Can you deliver or not done what you promised me? Menot asked.
They're in there, Menot. There's no other place they could be. We will find them.
How many double crosses can you perform in one day? Menot asked,
his earlier joviality no longer present in his voice. The Hylians, taking a cue from their commander, were now pointing their weapons Hayden's way. The Klondikes immediately responded in kind.
He helped us get away, I shouted, pointing at Hayden. What?
Menot and Hayden both asked, but for different reasons.
She lies, Hayden roared. Let her speak.
Before this started, Hayden told me something was about to happen, and that if I went along with it, he would let my people go. I did not know he planned on slaughtering the Comanchekes, but I saw a way for the Distancians to escape, and took it. My people were never meant for war.
That's obvious enough.
Menot was speaking to me, and then directed his next words to Hayden.
Is this true? Why would I spare any of them? I care nothing for them.
He and I have been intimate, I said, glancing back at Tallow. And his second in command, Serot, is in love with my friend Cedar. He wanted her to be safe.
There is truth in here somewhere, Menot appeared to be thinking it through.
How good is your truce if it is predicated on a lie? I boldly asked.
Cease, woman. I cannot think properly. It is easy enough to see you are attempting to fan sparks into a flame. What I am trying to do is understand where I stand in all this treachery. Get me back in my armor. It appears we might not quite be done with the fighting.
No one but his entourage moved as Menot grunted and huffed his way into the metal womb. When he was encased and had caught his breath, he spoke.
Hayden,
I care little for the Distancians. I may have even let your second-in-command keep his dear pet. But now it seems my hand is forced. I will appear weak if you do not immediately fulfill the terms of our agreement. Give that woman to me, disarmed and bound, and I expect every pathetic Distancian brought into my camp by this time next week. Living or dead, again, it makes no difference to me. If not, then this peace we are now enjoying will be shattered at great cost to you. Is that clear enough for your little Klondike brain?
Even the birds had enough wisdom to keep their chirping to themselves as Hayden flexed his hand continually on the pommel of his sword. If they fought, Tallow and myself would have a chance of escaping in the maelstrom. "Won't fight a girl? Won't fight a fat man? Should I find you some goats?" I goaded. Hayden's face was crimson. It might have been funny, but not one of his men laughed, although that didn't stop Menot and his men from doing so. I continued. "The mighty Hayden has to deceive his allies and lie his way into a deal with a sworn enemy. Is this the man you want leading the people of Klondike?" Hayden's men were looking around at each other, unsure of what was to happen next. Hayden pulled his sword free. "I am afraid of no one, especially you." He was pushing his men out of the way.
"Careful, Hayden. You harm the girl too severely, and I will consider it a further breach of our agreement," Menot warned.
"She'll live. She may not wish it, but she will live." Hayden was on the outside edge of Menot's men, who as of yet had not moved to allow him entry toward me. Menot nodded nearly imperceptibly, and the men parted. "And what if I should win?" I asked Menot.
"Then I will be rid of an arrogant enemy and one step closer to the total victory I have dreamed about for nearly a decade," he replied.
"Are you happy now, Winter?" Hayden asked as he approached. I paused as I answered. "In fact, I am." I crouched lower. "Tallow, move away," I said, without taking my eyes off of Hayden. I did not trust the man enough not to make a cowardly attack while I was looking away. "No, Winter. Move away. I do not have time for this. You will get me killed." I could feel the space around me expand as Tallow, and then Menot's men, made a bigger area for us to fight in. I'd expected Hayden to attack with brute force, letting all his anger and rage dictate his moves for him. I slid effortlessly into my refocused state. Hayden's arm muscles vibrated as they prepared to uncoil in a strike. I brought my sword up to deflect the swipe that was coming. I stumbled back as Hayden's left-fisted hand slammed into my temple. "Bet that hurt," he laughed. His men were cheering. I'd been so intent on his sword hand, I'd not bothered watching his other.
"Surprised? I've been watching you enough to know what your weaknesses are. I didn't get to lead my men because I was good with my tongue." The barb was directed toward Menot, but if the other had caught it, he made no mention.
My head throbbed and was bleeding, but I didn't dare check to see how much. Hayden was once again coming toward me, his sword arm flexing. I raised my sword up once again in defense as I looked for an open place to strike. His right foot hit me right below my stomach, sending me sprawling to the ground where I reluctantly filled my mouth with dirt.
"She fights like a girl!"
Menot was laughing so hard, his armor was jiggling. Or it could have been that my eyes were jittering in an attempt to stay focused. That was the key. Hayden was using my strength against me. When I focused, it brought my field of vision down to such a small window. I was missing the larger picture. And somehow Hayden knew that. Tallow grabbed my shoulder to help me up.
"Move away, boy," Hayden bellowed.
"This is enough." Tallow stood over me.
"It's enough when I say it's enough. She dares to belittle me in front of my men. She must pay the consequence."
Tallow did not yield his ground. Hayden may have been restrained when it came to my life, but he had no such fetters when it came to Tallow. He swung his sword with all his might. Tallow barely had enough time to deflect the blow.